Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the WIP 12 podcast. I'm your host, Head Chime or Ollie. I actually haven't done one of these episodes in quite a long time, but I thought I'd come back and I'd do one to cover the recent IGL satellite, which just ended a couple of weeks ago. It ran from sort of about January to March-ish, roughly. I'm joined by two guests today. I've got Fox Springer and Panda Beast Mode, who also took part in the event. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Hi,
hello, comrades.
Doing well.
Well, who'll be the first? I'm sorry. Because you asked both of us, and...
That's fine. I think it's going to be a bit chaotic today, because I do have two of you here. That's okay. So... the purpose of today's podcast is really just to talk about the recent event, how you found it, how you found the missions and the lists, and we can go through the top 16 a little bit and have a chat about that. There were some surprises to me. I don't know if they'll be as surprising to you. I noted the good representation of Morats, and I know Morats have improved since the rework, but I was surprised to see two players with Morats in the top 16. But anyway, we'll go through and we'll have a look. I guess to start with, Fox Springer, how was your run in this IGL? How was it for you?
Yeah, hello, comrades. Hello again. And, well, for me, I tried to play Kapu Halki because my viewers decided that I'll play Kapu Halki. There was a strong competition between Kapu, Svalarheima for some reason, and something else I don't really remember right now at the beginning of the league. And I decided that Kapu Halki will be a fun take, especially after the updates.
Mm.
It didn't really change to me, to be honest. Well, Burkut, yeah, because it was called Burtuk, and it was wrong. Burtuk is a city... And Burkut is a god bird deity, as far as I know. So Burkut is the correct name of the trooper. It's a beautiful heavy infantry, which counts as Sekban. And you may create a beautiful core for teams with composition and shoot really well, walk around, have EM templates, which can be dodged four times in a row by cutter. You know, all that stuff.
All of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, as usual. So I could have been on a place of king, but well, no, of course not. At the same time...
Did you go out to Varuna then? Is that you lost the game to Varuna?
Yeah, I've lost to King Bat in this game.
So just for reference to listeners, King Bat did end up coming second in the event, losing just in the final round to Ape Strong on Morat. So Foxbringer, you lost to the guy that came second, I guess.
Yeah, and who scatter dodged my aim template four times in a row.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm not pretending to be the second player in the entire tournament. But, no.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. What was list building like for you going in? Because we had quite a few zone control missions, and I'm not sure about Kapu Halki on that. You've got quite a lot of one wound dudes. How was it for you?
Before we started the recording, you said that in all rosters, it's very unusual for you to see so many wounds, as you said.
Mm.
But to me, like almost all the top rosters look completely normal, completely how can I say this, optimized or like regular meta rosters, and it's kind of the same in all the countries, as far as I can see, in the tops of the tournaments. Yeah, there are a few very interesting unit choices, or maybe some strange compositions, which I'll like never play myself, but I can totally understand them. And my personal rosters was like my rosters as I always create. Yes, I had evil hacking device just for the last lunch, for example. Of course, if you go first, you just slap it on the table, and the second order, you already extracted a specialist and a lot of points just for the mission. For armory, yes, you'd like to take some hiddens or maybe more heavy infantry like Knight of Montesa or a more template heavy infantry like my Burkuts, all that stuff. But I'd take them probably anyway. They're good specialists. Like for my faction, I don't have a lot of choice.
Sure.
That's a different story.
Okay. So how was it overall on Capicalchi? Did you feel sort of, you know, the faction had some legs, you were okay with them, or did you sort of really not enjoy your time with them?
Well, I always enjoy my time with all the crappy factions, but Capicalchi actually felt not bad.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of old. I feel definitely a lack of good infiltrators. A variety of infiltrator profiles with different specialities, for
right,
example,
right.
is what I wanted to say. And I feel a lack of very strong guns because I'm, to be honest, I'm original Pano player.
Yeah.
So I feel
yeah.
a lack of guns in every faction. But Capicalchi has like Azrael is beautiful, but only Ballistic 13.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Jean-Jean Bazan, MS-V2 sniper, normal sniper, just...
Yeah.
Well, AP plus shock, but like it's not double action. It's just ballistic 12, one wound for 30 points. Like
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
But no mimetism. What am I paying for? That much regeneration? Okay.
Hmm.
Like a lot of different rules combinations, which I'll never use, and I'd like not to pay for them.
Sure.
But the faction is definitely okay.
Oh, okay.
For me.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. I know there's been some chat about Capicalchi recently, and actually there are, you know, a couple of people have come out of the woodwork. They've come out to say, actually, Capicalchi seem all right, actually, quite playable. And obviously you did reasonably well with them. So well done for that. I'll come over to you, Panda. I mean, you did really well. I think you were on Aleph.
Yes, I was on one lot Aleph.
Yeah. How did you find your run? What kind of list did you take and what happened for you?
Yeah, first of all, I really, I have to say that I like Foxbringer's approach that you are using factions that are not considered that strong and also that you let your viewers, pick a faction for you. I really like that approach. It brings something new to IGL, I think.
Thank you.
But well, about my run, I lost one of the first three games, but managed to get one objective point out of that loss, and that allowed me to just squeeze in to top 16, and then I ended up winning the next two games, and then eventually played a draw against Ape Strong on sixth round. But Ape Strong won that on victory points.
Okay.
But yeah, overall, really good run, and I was happy with how well my ALF performed in the tournament.
And were you playing the sort of mid-rangers type character heavy build, or did you go for, you know, a bit more gun presence, or?
Yeah, I was pretty much playing the mid-rangers.
Sure.
This was the first 300-point tournament I played with Aleph. I had played, I think, one or two tournaments with reinforcements with Aleph, where you're pretty much forced to use the mid-ranger approach because you don't have points for Marudo, maybe not even for Achilles.
Sure.
And I just wanted to like expand on that 250-point list to 300-point lists.
Okay.
And also basically from list-building perspective, I wanted to try different things, that what is good in Aleph or what kind of combinations work.
Yeah.
And that's why all my lists were somewhat different. And I also tried to optimize them for the missions as well.
Okay. I think just for those people listening that aren't familiar, the mid-rangers Aleph builds, I'm sure you can probably describe it better than me, Panda, but I'd say, you know, it focuses not so much on guns, but more on wounds and eclipse, and it's about sort of maneuverability and things like that.
Yes, I think that's a pretty good description. So you have a lot of, like, mid-priced tools in your list that usually can do many things. So they are usually specialists. They can do some short range shooting. They can fight in CC. They have their own smoke. So you can just use one piece to complete multiple objectives.
Yeah. A lot of flexibility.
Exactly. The flexibility, I think, is the key there. And you are not really, like, because you have Eclipse grenades, there's really nothing that your enemy can do to completely stop you. They can slow you down, but you will make it to an objective. You will make it to an enemy model if you need to, as long as you have orders left.
Okay, yeah. Foxbringer, did you want to come in at this point?
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I can see a lot of definitely Adore, Penthesilea, Ippolita, all that stuff. And in one of the roster, I can see Davon with Rim Racer plus damage plus willpower. Why did you take it?
Well, that was the moment when Davon's came out, or they were added to Vanilla. So I wanted to try one Davon environment. I have used Davons a few times in reinforcements when they're where they're of course great, but I wanted to try how Davons work in normal 300 point games when they have the starting a deployment zone. And the REM racer, basically I had 12 points left. I had no idea what to take, so I just opted to take the REM racer for fun. And also like having plus one damage to Davon is great. Although the only game where I used that Davon, I totally forgot that I had the REM racer, so but it would have been beneficial if I had remembered.
Okay, so that's probably the only REM racer in entire like roster pack, and you forgot about it.
Exactly.
That's quite funny.
It was maybe the first time I used REM racer, so it's hard to remember when you're like using a lot of new stuff and to what you actually have.
I wanted to come back to something you said about building lists for the mission. I had a controversial thought. I think I'll go to Foxbringer first on this and then to Panda, but my thought was, actually, I looked through all of the top 16, and everyone in the top 16 submitted four lists. So that's two for the first three missions and two for the second three missions. The first three were quite zone-oriented, so it's Last Launch, Armory, and Frontline. And the second three for the top 16 cut was Engineering Deck, Firefight, and Unmasking. So a bit heavier on buttons, classified, a bit of zone, but not as much. But I noticed that almost everyone in the top 16 submitted basically the same lists for the first three missions and the second set of three missions. So do you really think people were building for the missions, or do you think people were just taking generically strong lists?
I think the generically strong lists diverse in like one to two troopers. Sometimes it depends on the faction. For me, I've submitted my two separate lists with a completely different units because I already lost one of the games in the first section of the tournament. And I decided, well, I'm not in top 16. What am I losing? And I submitted my list with Yanichar Core Fire Team and something else. And realized that my submitted list were kind of worse than the initial ones. So I, to be honest, I'd play with the same set of first rosters for my faction in the second part of the tournament if I'd have a chance.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like most of the rosters, yes, I can clearly see that in second part, sometimes there's like a different hacker, for example, appears for unmasking and what was the second mission with buttons?
Engineering deck has five buttons.
Yeah, engineering deck. And like all the stuff is pretty much the same except from one, two troopers doing different jobs.
So you would say, you know, it's probably the case of taking perhaps 12 or 13 generically good troops and then flexible one or two pieces that change, maybe, in your opinion?
Generically good for this player who wants to play with the same play style in the second part of the league. But sometimes I can see completely different players. For example, for the Grotnip, if I do remember correctly, his second part of the tournament had a full samurai roster with JSA. And there are a lot of like missile launchers for some reason. I don't know how to like ever play with this composition, but it's here and it's completely different from what he has.
Okay. Panda, what do you think about this idea?
I generally agree with Foxbringer that I think usually it's better to have similar lists where you might change a few pieces to optimize for the mission. Because there are some like serious risks involved if you start to optimize for the missions too much. First of all, like if you're familiar with your normal lists and you change that completely, it's going to be much more difficult to play with a completely new list than the list that you are familiar with.
Yeah.
And secondly, you also run the risk of over optimizing your list, by which I mean that your list is not good for the general Infinity gameplay anymore, where you are supposed to kill enemy models, protect your own models. That you only can do the mission and the focus can become too narrow. And that also, you might end up in situations that you are not really prepared at all for. Whereas if you're bringing more general, like good list, it usually can deal with most kind of situations, although it's not optimal for any of those situations necessarily.
Okay, yeah.
But for myself, basically, I had not tried any of these lists before the tournament. So I thought that I might as well optimize more for the missions and also like gave me more chance to try different models in Aleph.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So I think what I'm hearing is that a couple of things to bear in mind is that firstly, at its core, you know, Infinity is a shooting game. We've got to be able to project our forces across the board. We've got to be able to remove opposing threats. And so you're always going to have a core of the list that's proficient at that, or else, you know, you might end up suffering. And secondly, you want to always have a core that you feel comfortable playing. Comfort seems really important to top players because you want to, I guess, know your faction inside out and feel really quite confident with the capabilities of your units.
Yeah, exactly. Like just we talked about, if you're using Remracer for the first time in the list and totally forgot that you have a Remracer, it's not useful.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm going to come to you, Foxbringer, because you actually tend to faction hop quite a lot, don't you? I mean, I've seen you play most factions at this point. So how does this work for you?
Yeah, I literally play at all the factions in the game in the different tournaments, local or not local. Hmm. Well, of course, most of them in TTS because I don't have all the factions.
Sure.
In models, I have entire Pano from the second edition, probably, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but you said you wanted to play something in Capicalki that you felt confident or comfortable with. But how do you get comfortable with a faction if you've never really played it before? I mean, what's that like for you?
I read trooper stats. I understand what do they do. I play maybe 1-2 training games. I create compositions. I do podcasts for all the factions, so I generally know what people do when I'm asking different players about the factions I play. But, well, Capuchalki I did. Nobody played Capuchalki for me to take rosters from somebody. Well, actually, there is a player in St. Petersburg. I took ideas from him, general ideas, and I just created rosters for myself. I wanted more heavy infantry, I wanted better guns, I wanted more versatility, I just did it for myself.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It just, I can, for any faction in the game, I can create a, like, normal workable roster for, like, 10 minutes, in any case, for any mission, and then, yes, of course, we can optimize it, and that's what I did before the tournament.
Sure.
But that's not a problem for me.
I suppose the other thing that's worth bearing in mind is, for a lot of the experienced players, you know, if they get used to, I don't know, piloting a list that revolves around BS-13 heavy infantry, then that means, you know, regardless of faction, they're probably going to find similar units in, I don't know, Hacker's Lam, Yujing, Pano, all sorts of different places. And in that respect, maybe you just get comfortable at the game generally.
Maybe, yes. At the same time, Azrael is a unique Capuchalkian. Capuchalki trooper, and he has a separate role as armor killer and just straightforward face-to-face gun, but at the same time, Ballistic 13 is the best in the faction, and you cannot really brute force everything. Mm. Well, that's exactly what I did. I just created King Bat's Kamau sniper with my Azrael. That's a different story.
Yeah. What do you think, Pandra, about this sort of idea of piloting lots of different things, maybe becoming comfortable more generally versus specifically?
Yeah, first of all, quick comment on the Capuchalki. Actually, Krotnik has been playing Capuchalki quite a lot, and he's, I think, currently again playing Capuchalki after JSA. So maybe, Foxbringer, you should get in touch with Krotnik if you continue playing Capuchalki.
I'm sorry, I don't want to continue.
Yeah, I totally understand. Although I also agree with your earlier statement that I think Capuchalki is actually okay. They're probably like mediocre faction. They are not the best, but they are definitely not the worst factions in the game. But yeah, about faction hopping, they of course are like two approaches. Like there are some players like Kavrayon or Lobo who just play with two factions and basically same list all the time with those factions. And the advantage there is, of course, that you get really familiar with your list. You know all the capabilities of the list. It's really easy to play that list really well when you're so familiar with it. Personally, I kind of get bored with a faction if I play with it too long. So I also like to change up factions every now and then.
Mm.
And then when you mentioned that, when you like find some kind of way that you play a faction that you're like comfortable with, that you move that same or similar playstyle to another faction, I think that's pretty reasonable to do and like quite common, but that is probably a mistake. And I don't think there are the real top players do that, because usually when you like become comfortable with a faction, you have found some like pretty optimal way to play a faction. Mm. And if you try to do that in the same faction, it's probably not what they are the best at, unless if you're picking a faction that is very similar to your previous faction.
So you want to lean into the specific strengths of the faction, and that might not necessarily be, you know, the same strategy.
Yeah. Like, for example, before Aleph, I played quite a lot with Vanilla Hack Islam, and Vanilla Aleph, of course, has totally different strengths than Hack Islam.
Yeah.
And that was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to try Aleph this time, because in some ways they are the complete opposite of Hack Islam.
Mm. Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Okay, so before we dive into the top 16, let's talk about the tournament more generally and the sort of overall metagame. So just to remind everyone listening, we had three initial rounds that everyone played. They were Last Launch, Armory, and Frontline. Then we did a top 16 cut. So we took the top 16 of those first three rounds and they played a further three missions. But these were knockouts. So if you lost a game, you essentially went out. And the fourth, fifth, and sixth missions were Engineering Deck, Firefight, and Unmasking. And I think there was a seventh Grand Finals, which was on... what did they roll in the end, Panda?
Firefight.
They rolled again. Firefight again, yeah. So that's the sort of Grand Final. So a mixture of missions. The first set were very... they were quite objective room heavy, or sort of quadrant-based heavy, you know, area control. And then the latter three were a little bit more mixed. In terms of the overall meta, I think we had 35 factions represented, so nearly every single one. I can't see off the top of my head what wasn't played. I think a Contessamento wasn't played, Shock Army, and a couple of others, but I can't quite remember. Have you both had a chance to look at the factions that were popular and what wasn't played so much?
Yeah, I checked the list you sent us. The most popular faction is Combined Army Vanilla.
Mm.
Well, as always. Like, and one of the strongest factions at the same time being the most popular one, which speaks some things about the faction. At the same time, of course, we don't forget about the players, and nobody in the top played Combined Vanilla. I'm sorry, except for Ill Titan, I believe, yes?
Yeah, I think we had top 16. One. Yeah, one.
Yeah, Vanilla Combined. And I definitely met Peak, a player who is my nemesis in all the AGL tournaments. I don't know why, I just cannot win. but yeah, he was definitely playing Vanilla Combines.
Mm.
And then the second most popular was Military Orders and Aleph Vanilla.
Yeah.
Six players for each.
How do we feel about Military Orders? I'll come to you, Foxbringer, first, and then I'll do Panda second. Military Orders, six players out of 90. Second most popular faction. What do we think?
I think, with all, how to say this, love to Robert Sheffert, and I think he's completely incorrect placing Military Orders as one of the weakest armies in his tier list. But, well, tier list is always a personal opinion. Nothing special. And Military Orders is a very strong sectorial army. Very strong. They have literally everything you need. They have a tag and a gun, which can kill everything, climb on walls. It's even AP in this sectorial army. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. You have Dart. You have Trinitarians. You have Teutonic Knights, which can be in a separate Haris or in a full core. You can combine troopers, whichever you like, in the core. You can take Teutonic Knight and add any different specialist. You can take Crosshair Specialist and add, I don't know, Gabriel Defersen, Hacker Order, Sergeant, Engineer, Blackfriar, which with built-in Sixth Sense on HRL. So you can have Harrison Aero and a separate core. Like, you can take whatever you want in the faction. It has everything.
Yeah, so you're quite up on military orders. You're feeling good about them.
I'm Pano player.
Yeah, so, yeah. Absolutely. Panda, what are your thoughts? Six military order players.
Yeah, military orders is, of course, a fun faction. They are cool, and they basically have, like Foxbringer said, all the tools that you need. And I think, like, if you're calling military orders bad faction, it's probably because the list building for them is a bit difficult because they don't have those like huge variety of cheap models that help you to build lists. But that's more like player failure if you're not able to build good lists with military orders than failure of the faction itself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't necessarily consider military orders to be an A-tier faction, whatever A-tier means. And I'm also aware that I, in my own tier list, placed them in C-tier. I don't agree with that placement anymore. But yeah, I totally understand and get why there are six military order players in IGL this time, although I do find it a bit surprising, but not that surprising.
Sure. So sort of medium surprising. You know, they're good, maybe not that good, but, you know, they're fine.
Yeah, I think that it's the combination of being good, having good tools and cool models, and just generally being a cool faction.
Yeah. So 92 players entered, I think, roughly. Can't quite remember. 35 factions represented, as I just said. As Foxbringer pointed out, Combined Army, the most popular with 8 players. Military Orders, second most popular with 6. And then we had a couple of usual suspects for sort of joint... LF Vanilla was on 6 as well, actually. So that's also a really popular faction. Don't think we're particularly surprised by this. And then we, on 5 players, we had things like Cosmoflot, Steel Phalanx. Was Nomads on 5 as well? Yeah.
Yeah, so, I think Nomads were on 5.
So a couple of the usual suspects. So in terms of the most popular factions, Combined, Nomads, Cosmo, Aleph, not particularly surprising as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, pretty much the usual suspects.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so pretty straightforward there.
But I think in general it's really nice spread of different factions, that so many factions are present. Mm. And also, if you look at the top 16, what I'm like really happy about is that there are 14 different factions in top 16.
Yeah, top 16 is incredibly varied.
yeah, that's not something that you usually see in tournaments. Like there was this, I think last year's Planetario, when Kraken Masters had 3 different factions in top 10, and only one that wasn't Steel Phalanx or Bakunin. Of course, that's like not normal. Normal. Yeah. That's like the other opposite or the opposite end. But it's really nice to have that many factions. Also, factions that are not necessarily considered the strongest factions in the game in the top 16.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had. I think Spiral was 3rd. I don't think it would be too controversial to say that many people consider Spiral a bit meh, a bit mediocre. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would say Spiral is less than mediocre. Yeah. If they're using tiers, I would place them in C tier. Mm. So that was something that was a bit surprised that Spiral did so well. Of course, I think Serpent is a good player.
Absolutely,
I have played against him, but... he must be a good player.
Yeah.
For being able to bring Spiral on 3rd place.
Yeah. Foxbringer, what do you think? Spiral on 3rd?
I think that Serpentis, as locally known as RX Ron, is a Steel Phalanx, completely like terrible opponent. I mean, you cannot win against him usually. he's a very good player. And yeah, he's him playing Spiral Core. Like, the faction is, less than mediocre, I'd say. And his rosters, I don't really understand them. They're just one full group with 10 regular orders and a couple of Erex in the second. Mm. At the same time, that's Elite Militiamen and Diplomatic Delegate, so understandable. I won't play rosters like he did. But at the same time, yes, he is a very good player. He knows what he is doing. So.
Mm. And I think... You know, in this, we see Spiral does have the capability to sort of spam a lot of wounds, some markers and things like that. So maybe in terms of zone control missions and stuff, perhaps they're okay. I don't know. Question mark.
There are a lot of impersonators. So yeah. Kyoto Imposter, John Star, Grave Operator.
That's right, yeah.
So you can definitely do zone control pretty well. Yeah. Drawl, Fire Team, as I can see in his rosters. That's also for deployment. And Mim Team's minus six.
Yeah. I mean, Drawl are like two wounds Mim six units, as if I remember correctly. So.
Well, he loses mimetism when he loses his first wound, but
right,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also find his list really interesting. Like having three impersonators, three draws in one list, for example. And yeah, I think generally impersonators are good in zone control missions, but then the spiral impersonators have only one impersonation state that doesn't like impose any penalties for discover. So
yeah.
They are quite easily discoverable impersonators, although they have two wounds, so they're a bit more survivable.
Yeah. I think.
And then, he has a full core of brawlers with a couple of Thaugmas. That's also a pretty interesting choice, I think.
I don't understand brawlers. That's all I'm going to say. I don't. Not for me. Not for me personally. Can't fault the player, though. And this is absolutely one of the things that I wanted to say is, you know, we played. It was a long tournament with seven rounds for the top two, six rounds for the top four, you know, because it was elimination. And I think one of the things that I was reflecting on is that in a longer event, it really does come especially down to players more than factions, I think. And that might be why we've got such a varied top 16. I don't know. That's a theory that I'm having anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right. I guess it comes down to like which factions the top players pick for the tournament. And that is, or that has a huge effect on the faction spread that we will see in the top 10 or top 16 of a tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I told you that, you know, the top 16 of a tournament included, you know, King Bat, Lobo, yourself, you know, Serpentis, things like that. I don't think anyone would be surprised. So it's not really the players here that I'm surprised by. It's just the factions that they pick sometimes change. And I guess maybe that's testament to the fact that this game is fundamentally skill-based, you know. What do you think, Foxbringer?
Yeah, I think that's totally correct. It was proven for literally like almost every single tournament. It's proven again and again that it's skill-based. Of course, some games can be like dice roll-driven, especially if the faction is not great or in some certain matchups. In some situations, you just shouldn't win, but you do win. But it really depends on really this one moment in the game, what it can happen. And then opponent cannot retake like back the game because he loses like in the second instance of this important roles. That's much more rare than just a general player skill, of course.
Before we move on to the top 16 lists and looking at that, any other comments on the general faction spread? I mean, four on Ikari, is this a meme or is something else going on here? You know,
like for me, it's a complete meme. Like Ikari, in my eyes, is one of the worst factions. At the same time, it's not bad. But, you know, I don't want to play Ikari. I'd better play Kapo Halki again.
Yeah, what I know about Ikari is that at least Cobra Prime asked in Facebook or did a poll which is the worst faction in the game, and he wanted to use that faction for this tournament, and the winner was Ikari. And I think, as generally, Ikari is like bad to mediocre faction depending on the missions that you have. It's pretty okay in zone control missions because they can spam a lot of wounds in their list. But then if you need people to press buttons, then they start to struggle.
Yeah.
Oh, and
the
lieutenant choice is like awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that as well.
Yeah. Yujing Vanilla, four entries, no one in the top 16. We surprised or not? How are we feeling about Yujing?
Yujing is a well-known camo spam, and it's just generally overall strong faction, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I was surprised to not see Yujing do better than they did, actually, more than anything else. I'm a big fan of the faction. I was happy to see they're reasonably popular, and I was surprised to not see any in the top 16. But yeah, sometimes it happens. As we said, it's players, isn't it? Not really factions.
Well, you know, Panov was a mistake, but Yuching is a mistake, so.
No one really wants to be playing Yuching anymore. Right.
At the same time, there's literally no Panov vanilla players in the tournament, so I'm really sad.
No one played vanilla Panov. No one played Shock Army. Did we have Svalaheimer? One person on Sval.
Do we have a Neo Terra?
Do we have a Neo Terra? No, we don't actually. So most of the missing factions are Panov and its sectorials. Yeah.
Well, at the same time, four Varuna players. That's interesting.
Yeah. Do we feel that Varuna is good at missions like Last Launch, Armory, and Frontline? I mean, were these sort of cutter missions, or what's going on here? Or do you think it's just random? You know, people just wanted to play Varuna.
I think all the faction distribution is just always random. People just random. Want to play what they're playing here. And then final placement on factions depends on player skill.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Panda, would you disagree, or does that seem about right?
Yeah, I agree with that. That people play what they want to play. Of course, they might like look at the mission lineup before deciding a faction, and if like the faction that they're thinking about is really awful in those missions, they might pick another one. But in general, it's the faction that they want to play at that time.
Yeah.
And I don't think many players look at the mission lineup and think that this faction is the best for this mission lineup, and they pick that faction. Mostly it's just like, if the faction is awful for that mission lineup, then they don't pick that.
Right.
But generally, they go what they most want to play.
So perhaps we're saying here, it's not necessarily about optimizing and picking the faction that's literally the best at the mission spread, but rather it's just about picking something that is competent, that's okay.
Yeah.
Or especially picking which is not competent.
Yeah. So some people, there are lots of ways of picking your faction for a tournament. Some people roll randomly. I know you do that, Foxbringer. Some people want a challenge. They want to bring something that's a little bit weaker. And some people want to just bring the faction that they're most competent with. So that's why, you know, you might see a lot of sort of vanilla factions that a lot of people just feel are flexible and decent and they know how to play. I think that's reasonable, really, particularly if you're gearing up for six missions.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, I think kind of run out of things to say about the general meta. Oh, I don't think I mentioned, but rough count, I think about 20 nationalities overall. That was a brief sort of cursory look, but it seemed, you know, quite well represented for different metas. Lots of Russia, lots of US, lots of UK. Then other places, you know, we had Turkey, Montenegro, you know, lots of different areas. And I really like that about IGL, because you get to see what other places are playing, what other people feel, things like that. So I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's really nice to see so many nationalities coming together to play Infinity. I guess this is the most or the second most after in the Planetario International Tournament. There probably is.
Yeah, I think Interplanetario and IGL are kind of unique at the moment for bringing lots and lots of people together. There might be tournaments in the future that really aim to attract that international audience, but I think at the moment that's kind of where we are, just with those two, as far as I'm aware, anyway.
I have to mention that Cyber Baltic in Latvia, they usually have at least 10 different nationalities.
Oh, that's great.
In their satellite tournament, which is pretty good for like real life tournament.
Yeah, that's really good. That's
that has maybe, I think, 40 places.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, especially the European events can attract a lot of different nationalities because of location and things. So that's really cool. I appreciate that. Well, I guess we'll move on to the top 16. We can have a chat about some lists and see what's in there. So before we begin the discussion, let's just go through. So first place was Moratz. That was Apestrong. Second place was King Butt on Varuna. Third place was Serpentis on Spiral Core. Fourth was yourself, Panda, on LF Vanilla. Fifth was, sorry, I'm scrolling through if you can hear me scrolling. Elisane, I'm not too sure how to pronounce that name.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Even he.
Okay.
Yeah.
Elisane on O12 Vanilla. Then we had sixth place. You can probably pronounce this better than me, Foxbringer.
It's Piv, short from Piva.
Okay.
I mean, beer on Russian.
Okay. Moratz again. So that's our second Moratz placement. We had Lobo on seventh with Nomads. Very traditional list that Lobo players we've seen before. We had Mr. Baggins, a good German player, I believe, on Assassins. We had Levius on Invincible Army. Maybe we could talk about that because, I must say recently I've been, talking down Invincible Army and I think I might be wrong about that. So we can go through that a bit later. Pilgrim on MO, as we said, there was a lot of MO, so it's good. Barry, I think on Discord is Hot Fresh Tofu on Aleph. So that's our second Aleph. 12th was Cthulhuist on Bakunin. 13th was Stripless on Druze. Bit of a surprise placement maybe, so perhaps we can talk about the surprise Druze entry, or maybe not a surprise to some people.
Which place did I take on Druze in the last time? 4th?
With Druze.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, 8th.
8th with Druze, right? Yeah.
Druze is a strong faction.
Yeah, they've certainly been buffed a lot, haven't they? They've been changed a lot recently.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and I can see one of the rosters is called I Stole This From Yellow Snake.
Yeah. Okay. We have 14th was Grotnib on JSA. Obviously a great player. Been playing a lot of QK and JSA for a while now. 15th was El Titan on Combined Army. Maybe a surprise that it was the only Combined Army placement in the top 16. And then finally, we had Tacos on Hack Islam. And again, this was the only Hack Islam entry. So just to quickly sum up, we had 14 different factions out of 16, two Morats, two Aleph. The others were just sort of individual placements, Varuna, Spiral, O12, Nomads, Assassins, Invincible, MO, Bakunin, Druze, JSA, and Combined. So looking at it overall, Foxbringer, surprises to you, or are you just saying, you know, these are very experienced players, so, you know, they can bring a lot of different factions and do well?
Well, all the nicknames are familiar to me, so there's like no surprise over here.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of players I'd not expect here, and I'd expect some different players from the like entire tournament in the top, but that's a different story. That's sometimes it's random, sometimes you just perform much better in the first three missions, and that's it. And that's how top cut works. That's a slightly different to what we can expect looking into top 16 in the final in ITS. That's a different topic.
Maybe we take a step back here actually and talk about the pros and cons of a top cut, because it was a controversial choice. I know we've had discussions about this, and I think some of the pros were that we got, you know, a quite entertaining self-contained top 16 that made streaming easier. So that was really good. Lots of people were tuning in to watch the games. The downside, of course, meant that if you sort of didn't perform well in the first three rounds, you couldn't really recover because you wouldn't make the top cut. So there are pros and cons. Panda, how did you feel about this sort of idea of doing a top 16 cut? Good idea, bad idea? What's your thoughts?
I really like the idea of trying something new. And also, this is like, if you look at other sports, this is the normal way things are done. Swiss is, I think, quite uncommon in many sports. So I totally get the idea. And I think it was fun to try something different. I mean, of course, both systems have their pros and cons. And I can't really say which one is better.
Sure. I think it did add some excitement because we had, you know, this really well-defined top 16. But I also understand that, you know, maybe some people were disappointed that if they had an unlucky game on round one or two, it meant that, you know, perhaps they were then less likely to do well or to make the top 16. So, yeah, pros and cons. What did you think, Foxbringer?
Good that they kept keeping a track of games for all the, like, overall yellow points. because just top 16 cut or top 16 yellow points, it's kind of, top players are kind of similar level to me, yeah. I think. Mm. So it's just, how to say this, an official way to separate them into different places, but that's just it.
Yeah.
And at top 16, it's not very different. Mm. Yes, of course, if you lose a game in top 16 cut, you most likely will fall behind players who keep playing very, very, very well against. Yeah. Like, if you lose the first game and then do all major wins, of course, you'll be in very top.
Mm.
So it may happen. But at the same time, I can see that most of the players are the same places anyway. It's like Cobra Prime on top 16, ITS with Ikari, Froggy with Vanilla Nomads, Diablo KNK with Vanilla Combines, Brook Vanilla Combines, Fez Hockey Slam, and Jochovic with Steel Phalanx. Mm. That's the new additions to the top.
Are these the placings on OTM versus the placings on the top 16 cut?
Yes. Yeah. I just named players who are in top 16 in OTM.
Yeah, and so this was a major downside of the system, was of course because we only continued some players, we got really strange sort of OTM results that aren't the same as our top 16 cuts. So one of the things I would say is thank you so much to Iskandar for running the OTM side of things. I know it was a nightmare. It wasn't happy that we were doing it this way. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, retiring 90 players is a nightmare.
On round 7, I did have to retire 90 players. It was not fun. So I think it was an interesting idea. Would IGL do it again? I don't know. Maybe it was a bit more trouble than it was worth. I'm not sure, but it was fun. So there we go.
Yeah, from
I think the general idea was nice, but like the only thing that you wasn't so sure at the very beginning that people left in the bottoms, like not in the top 16 cut, will continue the game.
Yeah.
It would be better to know in advance that yes, they will, and yes, the ITS will keep continue, like it's OTM will be kept. So I think the idea is nice. I liked it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. But I thought that people that wouldn't make the top 16 would want to drop. And then we kind of got to the point where we had to make the cut and people wanted to continue playing. So I was quite surprised by that. That's why we had a bit of confusion there.
But yeah, I think it was really good.
In the biggest tournament in the world, second biggest. So, of course, we want to continue.
Sure. Sorry, Panta, you were
going to say. Yeah, I think it was really good that you listened to the feedback from the players and adjusted things on the fly, even though it caused a bit of confusion. It was still, I think, most people were really happy that they were able to play longer than they thought.
Mm.
And also, second thing to the like difference in rankings between OTM and the top 16, I think some players still stop playing after dropping out of the top 16, and that's also something that changes the rankings in OTM because some players there have less games that made into top 16. But and also to the like earlier question, which one is better? Of course, the bad thing is that in the top 16, that if you lose with zero objective points one game early on with bad luck, that means that you will not be in the top 16, which is definitely a downside. But then on the other hand, most often with the Swiss system, what happens is that there are some players who lose one game early on, and because of that, they tend to get to play against easier opponents throughout the rest of the tournament, and they end up in really high places because their opposition has been much weaker, whereas the other players in the top usually play against each other a lot, and that knocks them down. And with the top 16, you get the top players together to play against each other. And also, I think the one nice thing that you did was that the first player after three rounds played against the 16th player.
Yeah.
So that actually gave some benefit to you for doing well instead of what normally happens in the Swiss system, that if you do well, you just have to play against more difficult opposition.
Yeah, so normal Swiss can reward you for submarining a bit, which is where you sort of do, you know, mediocrely. But, you know, if you get lots of minor victories, you'll end up on top eventually with tournament points. Whereas in this system, what we did was we made sure that whoever was first played the 16th person in the top 16, second played 15th. It was still difficult matches, still challenging, but it meant that there was an actual reward to doing really, really well and not just doing sort of well enough to get through.
Yeah, exactly. And in any case, with both systems, the player who is at the top is the same.
Yeah.
So it doesn't affect the overall winner for the tournament.
So I guess maybe this is the moment that people have been waiting for. Let's kind of go to lists and have a discussion. I had some question marks about Invincible Army and Druze myself, so those are ones that I'm curious about. But we can go through a couple of interesting points and have a look at them together. Foxbringer, do you want to start? Any interesting points to you, anything you've noticed or things you just want to talk about a bit?
Okay, so the first, like in the top lists, Ape Strong, like lists generally okay to what I can see in our meta. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was really surprised by seeing Kiosot killing Platoon Trooper with MSV1, Submachine Gun, Chain Colt. And to remind everybody, he has BS Attack T2.
That's right. So that's the T2 one.
Ammunition.
Yeah.
But it's still one wound for 30 points. And I don't understand why did he took it. It was in the first half of the tournament. So probably entering the room and putting chain calls into everybody in the room.
Panda, you have a response to this?
Yeah, that's actually exactly the reason that I think Ape Strong made this list specifically for Armory, and Kiosot was specifically, or its purpose was to enter the room and kill targets that are or can be difficult to kill otherwise, like different heroes in Aleph or Steel Phalanx, because it has T2 chain called and T2 submachine gun with MSV2. It's pretty efficient in cleaning the room.
MSV1 and mimetism. Submachine gun AP, which in addition will benefit from T2 ballistic attacks, that's devastating.
Yeah, so I guess we can kind of understand why it's there. It is an expensive single wound trooper, but I guess if someone's gone first, they've got troops in the room, you need to clear it. You know, you've got T2 templates and an AP T2 weapon. So, yeah, I can understand why it's there.
Which you cannot smoke dodge, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What was your next point that you had, Foxbringer?
Oh, my next point is Serpentis, but we already discussed that. I just don't understand the lists.
Sure. And I think that's fine. I get that quite often. I look at a list and I just think I wouldn't play this personally.
Like King Bat's rosters seem like the same what I'd play, to be honest. Very similar. If I'd play Cutter. I probably don't really like Cutter that much, but it's a very good trooper.
Anything you noticed that was, you know, a little bit more unusual, something that sort of raised an eyebrow that you were curious about?
Double Montesa to score armory, so it seems normal, but that's literally the only, like, diverse thing from normal Varuna lists.
Cool. Any other points that you had?
Okay, then we can continue. Well, Panda, Solo Davon plus Rim Racer. Yeah, that's I'll mark this solved.
Yeah.
The next one, Alessane. That's a completely random territory. The player is well known in our community, like a player playing in non-orthodox way, is what I can say. Like, it's like a roster with only one heavy gun, and this heavy gun is Psycop multi-marksman. That's it. And at the same time, rosters with four hidden deployments.
Yeah.
Like two links, two razors. Like what?
Yeah.
And the second part of the tournament, I've listened to his story about how did he... Where's the roster? Yeah, the fourth roster. Casanova and Andromeda infiltration plus three. So he infiltrated them under opponent's deployment, cleared some ARO, and then dropped four paratroopers on his head. Like Crusher combo jump to Delta and Quer of Goldstein.
Yeah,
and he killed some stuff as them, that was completely unexpected by his opponent. I do believe nobody expects four paratroopers.
No, absolutely not. That's quite a funny roster. Double infiltration units, four drop troops. Amazing.
Yevo hacker. Yeah, so you drop everybody anywhere you'd like without a big problems, and especially on something like Firefight. Oh my god.
It's very funny. And I think, you know, what's most interesting is this guy came fifth playing O12, took a list that was perhaps a bit memey, but actually had some legs, could perform, had some good ideas behind it, and, you know, did really well, actually.
He does this every tournament in our community also. Nobody understands how he does it and how he plays with this unit compositions.
Yeah.
But every single time something unexpected happens. Mm. Every single time. Mm. And that's probably one of the beautiful ways of playing. Yeah. You just surprise your opponent.
Panda, what do you think? Four drop troops in one list.
Yeah, when looking at the list, that the ones that jumped out to me most were also Isle of Science lists, both the covert operation and the drop zone list. I guess you can put the top 16 list documented in the show notes so others can see.
Mm, yeah,
but he had the covert operation list in both in the first three and the last three missions. Yeah, it has four hidden deployment models and a parachutist. I don't know if that was like made for frontline, so you can, and like if he was like wanting to take the second turn and then just on the last turn bring all troopers into the zones, or of course they were already in the zones because they are infiltrating.
Yeah.
At least Razors are. But yeah, I also don't really understand them, but it's really nice to see something totally different.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And especially like doing this well in Infinity tournaments.
Yeah.
So I really have to applaud his approach.
Yeah, he's done really well, taking some lists that were quite unusual. And even with the more usual list, the first one that he took at the beginning, I think it only really had one main gun. Oh, no, that's not true. Actually, it had two. You've got the Epsilon and the Gamma, but quite reasonably light on guns as well. So it's interesting.
Yeah, the first list is what I consider quite basic.
Mm.
One LO 12.
Yeah.
But it still has some flavor as well.
Yeah. Keep going through your list, Foxwings. We've spoken about fifth place. What was next on your list?
Well, I'll skip the sixth because it's like 15 model Morot army. Nothing really that special.
Yeah.
I don't see any Chaos Sots. So that's the normal Morot list. Lobo lists. We'll skip that.
Lobo plays what Lobo plays.
I think Lobo submitted only three lists to the tournament, and two of them were the same.
Yeah.
For the first three rounds, he had just one list, and for the last possibly four rounds, he had one list plus one list if the last mission is countermeasures or highly classified.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the last list was only for the last seventh mission.
Yeah. And we've known for a while, you know, Lobo just really plays the one list most of the time. So I don't think that's too surprising to us.
I don't fear an opponent who knows 1,000 strikes, 1,000 combos. But I do fear a player who knows one combo, who did perform his one combo 1,000 times.
Absolutely.
And the next one is Mr. Baggins. Double Asavira is unusual to me, and seeing so many Dailami and Mutavia in the second group, a full irregular group. In our meta, it's no more the case. We don't see any lists with more than three irregulars, I do believe, in our meta. Or maybe they are distributed in between groups, like two Dailami, one in the first group, one in the second, and maybe one to two Mutavi, and some regular stuff. She runs around, does some things. Of course, Makmuro. But I don't remember anybody playing with like six irregulars in the roster.
Yeah, I've seen this a couple of times with Assassin's rosters where they take a group two that's just Dailami and Ghazi. I must say my personal opinion is that I don't like it that much. I do prefer having a few more regulars and a bit more flexibility. I'm often afraid that if I have a bad first turn, I'm going to be left with a first group that maybe just has six orders and I can't really, you know, do very much. So, but, you know, Mr. Peggins did very well, so he must have piloted the list quite expertly. But yeah, I agree. It's not my personal play style. What do you think, Pandra, about the sort of whole group to irregular ARO stash zone control strategy?
Yeah, so I agree with Volkspringer that it's a bit unconventional approach, and you really need to know how to use that list. But also, like, if you're going second, for example, usually your opponent has to get through the Deilamis and Muttavias first before they can actually touch your main combat group, so that keeps them a bit protected. And I saw a couple of games from Mr. Baggins, and he was using two Asaviras in a Harris team, I guess, with the Gulam NCO, and he was like being really aggressive with the Asavira. So he just in the first mission, he just took control of the launch room with Asaviras and kept control of the room during the entire game, which I found as a really fun approach to play that list. And also that mission.
Yeah, that's interesting to see, because if you keep Asavira in the main room and if opponent plays any hacking, you're just losing Asavira. But of course, he did see that his opponent didn't have any hacking. So I do believe I didn't see the game.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have hacking, I guess. And then the end, I think he probably brought Fiddler or took ID card for the Fiddler and like extracted him.
Oh yeah, Fiddler is a very powerful model, of course.
Yeah.
And I do remember my game, the last game of the previous IGL, me playing Druze against Perjan. And Perjan did play with something similar. And I think he had a lot of troubles. Well, of course, after I isolated his lieutenant with EM grenade launcher shot, well, that's a different story. But in general, to me, I think there is a lot of problems when you lose a couple of regular models, and then, well, that's it.
I agree. It, to be honest with both of you, actually, it's part of the reason I've moved away from Hack Islam, because I personally feel that you can be resistant to aggression. You've got jammers, you've got Deilami, things like that. But if someone does get through, you might suddenly find yourself playing with far too few regular orders, and it is a real problem that I've had, and it's actually why I've moved away from the faction a little bit.
Yeah, I think with Vanilla Hack Islam especially, but I guess also with Hassim Bahram, it requires a lot of skill to deploy in a way that the opponent can't touch the models that you don't want them to touch. So, like, the way you want to play Hack Islam is that you force your opponent to engage those irregular models first and make it very hard for them to engage any like important models.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I also agree with both of you that this, this is not an approach to Assassins that I would personally take, and it does come with some like significant risks.
Mm.
But again, I like to see different things, and obviously Mr. Baggins did well. Mm. So he clearly knew how to like pilot this list.
Yeah, I mean, well done to him. Eighth place overall. And I think lists that have some risks about them, but also a couple of different things. And I think that's really cool. Shall we move on to something that I've been curious about? That's the ninth place Invincible Army. Foxbringer, any notes on these?
Well, the first note is that's our like personal Invincible Army player, and he is like the Invincible Army player in our community. Right. We don't have any others.
How do you feel about Invincible Army? What's your general thoughts?
Well, that's 15 order pain train in the first group, which just slaps you and you just fall unconscious and you're not feeling really great after his first turn. But at the same time, if he loses a model in his Zuyong team, that's a very big deal for a pain train roster style. So you need to focus on, actually, you don't really need to heal order base around them. You don't really care about them, which sounds maybe ridiculous, but when you fight against archetype with a pain train, If you kill at least one of paint train models, that's already a big deal for them. If you kill, for example, Firewall minus 6 Tactical Avern Zuyong, that's a big problem. If you delete Bichier, and Bichier is kind of the main short to close range fighter, it's also a very big deal for them. At least just isolate, because there's no engineers, as you can see.
Yeah, no engineers, yeah. Yeah,
and no engineer approach is what we've talked about for some time with him and with Journey. Actually, some of the rosters are based on Journey lists when Journey did play the game. So I don't know. They both said that, well, if you got isolated, you don't really care. This one guy can like move once per turn, do some stuff, and that's okay. Maybe twice because they have tactical awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Half of them.
And you just continue with your pain train, and nobody really cares that much. And I kind of agree with it. I'd take an engineer, probably.
Okay.
To me, engineer is important. But I'm not playing Invincible Army. And in the second group, also, you can see a Harris with just a Hideout. And it's a very good recent addition.
Yeah.
And it's an annoying model to deal with. You cannot just walk past Hideout.
And then for the third list is the same as the first. So they submitted two identical lists, and then the last one is a little bit different, I think. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it was more Hideout, Hideout Chain of Command, Zhenche for the Observer. I don't know why Hideout Chok. For what reason? For what mission?
No, I'm not sure. Not sure.
Specialist with discharge. Why not?
Yeah, yeah. Any thoughts, Pandra, about these lists, about Invincible Army and you know, pros, cons, thoughts?
Yeah, first a quick comment about the Yellow Snakes lists. Maybe the Hideout Chain of Command is for Firefight if he was scared that the opponent would target his lieutenant, because loss of lieutenant is also pretty bad for this pain train.
Oh, actually, yeah, since that's the roster for the second part, maybe he did knew about the first matchup or the matchup against, some, like, Hassassin faction. I don't know which opponent did he play in the second part.
But yeah, in general, I agree with Foxbringer's take here. And I feel that for Invincible Army, the results can be somewhat polarized. If you have a good matchup and things go your way, you can absolutely crush your opponents without them being really able to do anything to you. But then some matchups can be really difficult, and if things don't go your way, that they're able to isolate one of the models from your link team or kill them or something like that happens, then the game can quickly become really difficult.
Yeah, so perhaps a bit of a feast or famine faction. You know, you can do really well, absolutely smash enemies, or you can get very, very locked down by problematic things like repeaters, isolation, stuff like that can be difficult. So polarized, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah, actually I played against Levius in one previous IGL. I was playing Hack Islam, and he was playing this pretty similar Invincible Army kind of list, and I failed a couple of crucial roles in the beginning of the game, and that ended up being a really miserable game for me because it was really hard to do anything to that pain train anymore after losing a couple of models or being inefficient with them.
Yeah. Anything else on the Invincible Army, or should we move on to the next sort of points of note? 10th place, Military Orders, Pilgrim.
To me, as Military Orders player, well, first of all, there's like not 15 model rosters. I don't understand it. I'd better to, I don't know, remove one of three Trinitarians and take a 15th model. I want all the orders. At the same time, I can completely understand why did he take them, but I cannot understand Lost and GML roster. Like, that's a very sinful act of playing guided missile in Military Orders.
I don't think
and
he
it's
actually
like
played
on,
it.
On the very edge of his resurrection program being revoked.
Yeah.
Like, you need, like, pray in the corner, I don't know, 20 times, like 92 times for every single player in the same tournament.
So I think I caught Pilgrim talking on the Pano channel about the GML roster, and I think they were saying that they didn't like it because it relies basically on Robinhood to do a lot of the hacking, lifting, and they just didn't think it was actually very good.
Yeah, and the Peacemaker
list.
I don't know if he actually used it, but he did say he didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, so if he GML, didn't use, then that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess GML is not really what military orders do well. Although, I think one way to use GML, I mean, this is totally sinful. I do not recommend anyone to do this. But if you wanted to use GML in military orders, you could use those Trinitarian forward observers to forward observe opponents because you have a surprise attack and there's a minus six. Mm. Instead of hacking.
Kind of like you can even like, do.
And yeah. Sometimes when you just appear on the table, walk past any opponent heavy, I don't know, solo arrowing trooper, sometimes they just discover you because, you know, you have submachine gun or a shotgun. What can you do? And you just, forward observe.
Yeah.
And
that's...
Yeah. You need to understand very well what you're doing with forward observers, doing forward observing stuff in this game in general, because forward observing skill is like not very useful. And I actually, to be honest, did try before Peacemaker nerf. I did play with two Peacemakers. There were no Robin Hood in the army in this way, and with Gabriel de Ferzen. It was actually kind of working GML roster.
Well, we're not going to talk about GML in Pano. Moving on.
About the first list, I think it's a good example of how, I mean, this could like include one model more. I agree with Foxbringer, but this is a good example of how you can actually fit every good model in a faction to a single list. So I don't really understand the talk about military orders being a bad faction because you can't have all the tools that you want.
Yeah, all three Trinitarians, Dart, Tikbalang, all three Teutons. Well, that's it, and 14 models.
Yeah.
Without a problem.
Yeah. Very good list, I would personally say, actually.
I'd prefer something like the third list, when you have Teutonic Spitfire Harris. And, well, me personally, I don't like Teutonic Missile. I prefer Blackfriar and have full three Teutonic Fire Team. But... Yeah, the third list is what I usually play. Yeah.
Yeah, and like obviously you've got the Teutons, you've got the Tick, you've got Dart, you've got, I don't know, just a really good distribution of threats. And I think MO does that quite nicely.
Oh, Warcore Sixth Sense? Wait, what? Okay, maybe just a misclick, but because the second roster has Warcore 360.
Maybe just a misclick on the wrong Warcore.
Yeah, although actually, Sixth Sense Warcore isn't that bad because there are like quite few situations where where actually 360 visor is better than Sixth Sense because if you're getting shot from behind, you still get to like react because of the Sixth Sense. It's like only when there's an opponent outside of 8 inches behind your like or on your back arc who is not shooting you when the 360 visor is better. But I still
I think 360 visor is better in general because nobody can combat jump behind you. You can position your worker in any corner of the map and nobody can ignore this worker by a good movement. They must deal with it, otherwise they will be stunned. Well, it depends on the situation, of course, but I don't understand Sixth Sense Worker in general, like, never, except if you're playing John of Arc list and you have a Worker deep in a corner in the building in your deployment zone, and, like, Sixth Sense will just help to survive.
Yeah, I guess. Should we move on to the 11th place ALF? I think we've got a sort of standard-ish mid-rangers list here, and then we've got a Marut list, from what I can see.
Yeah, and I personally don't see any, like, anything bad, like, normal rosters, nothing special.
Yeah, actually, Barry has submitted only two lists, so I guess he used the same list for
He did.
Second, or the last three rounds as well. But yeah, pretty basic list, like, normal mid-ranger list, quite normal Marut list.
One of the things that's been coming up from a couple of people, Dre was talking about this and Tofu's spoken about this as well, is the Dakini HMG, just as quite a cheap throwaway but decent gun platform because it's fast, it has mimetism. Now, there have been arguments about whether you run the Evo to buff it or whether you don't, because it's, you know, it's fine at 21 points and you don't really need to overinvest. What do we think about that?
I think buying Evo just for one model may be too much, because like I've spoken about Evo in almost every single chat. Fairy Dust is a mistake. Never use Fairy Dust. But if you already have Evo, and maybe you kind of can. Well, no. Fairy Dust is a mistake. So if you take Evo just for Fairy Dust, you're making a big, big mistake. But for Dakini, why not? You kind of can do this. But that's not a necessity.
What do you think, Panda?
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, if you have the points and the SWC, you might take an Evo, but I don't think it's necessary. If you have two Dakinis, then maybe, but also in that case, you can have the like super wear program only for one Dakini at a time. So, and if the Dakini goes down, usually you're trying to engineer it back up. So,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter that much whether you have two or one Dakinis.
Yeah.
So I think it's completely okay to not use an Evo. But in general, I haven't tried Dakinis with Aleph yet. I think they're okay. Like the one downside is that you then, of course, have to have an engineer in your list. But if you have an engineer only for one Dakini, that seems maybe a bit or not optimal.
Oh, yeah, in the first list. But there's Macaon with Yudbot at the same time, so.
Yeah, there's engineer with Yudbot and Macaon with Yudbot. But of course, you can engineer Yudorus as well. But yeah. Besides Dakini and Yudorus, you don't really have much that you want to engineer, I guess.
I think the Pano player here probably won't like this, but I've spoken a bit before about how I think that an active turn gun, if it's cheap enough, doesn't necessarily have to be overwhelmingly powerful. It just has to be good enough to get the job done. So is BS-11 with mimetism good enough to get the job done?
Plus, sometimes.
Mm.
It all depends where you're shooting at. If you have a like fully pure core linked Suryat, it's not going to be enough.
Sure. What did you say, Foxbringer? Sorry.
I said blasphemy. Blasphemy, it costs 20 points and it doesn't have ballistic 13. Like that's
it doesn't exist. It's dead to you.
Yeah. Mm. But to be honest, yes, Dakini is a good trooper on its own. It's fast. Mm. It's somewhat durable. It's repairable. Very well repairable.
So yeah, I think it's decent. Second list was a Marut list. This looks pretty standard for a Marut list, I think.
It also has one Dakini there.
Yeah.
And like what Foxbringer said, I think really like the important thing in Dakinis is the speed. Like it's usually quite frustrating when you have a good weapon on a 4-4 platform that you have to spend so many orders to actually move that gun into a place.
Yeah.
Whereas Dakinis can get there faster. And also because they have remote presence, they are somewhat okay in RO duty as well. I mean, they kind of like be an overwatch position looking the entire field, but taking some angle is okay with them because when they get shut down, you can still repair them.
Yeah, they're tough-ish, aren't they?
As I think about the second roster, I don't like... Well, I prefer my tags having all the orders. And here, Marut in the first group with both Lamet, it's a Flash Pulse bots, and the Worker and Bishandra FTO. So half of them, or maybe all of them, will die if opening goes first. Well, many of them will die. Not all of them, but depends on how you deploy them. But most likely Worker, Bishunter, and one of Lamet's. So Marut will have even less orders.
Although in that case, you can move Marut into the second group.
And for free, at Strategist level 2, you're correct.
Yeah. I guess the idea here is that Marut, or at least in the beginning of the game, Marut will shoot down all the arrows that the opponent has, and then Uteros or Penthesilea will go forward, or Liberto. And then maybe in the end, when you have lost some models, then move Marut or someone else to a different group.
Yeah, probably not my playstyle. Mm. I prefer to do everything with a tag.
Yeah, well, that's the pano player in you.
I don't have Eudoros, so...
Yeah. No, there's no Eudoros in pano, so you're not used to that kind of mid-range firepower. So that was 11th place Aleph. We're moving on now to Cthulhu, a Russian player, I think, on Bakunin.
Yeah, Cthulhuist. Cthulhu is actually Cthulhu from Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
So in Russian it will sound Cthulhu, and it was translated like, and Cthulhu is like Cthulhu cultist. So Bakunin.
Yeah, Bakunin. I mean, listen, we've got the Chimeras, we've got some Riot Girls, we've got the Cenobites. Can't say I'm massively surprised by either of these. Denma's in the list. How do we feel about Denma?
I've seen Denma on tables a couple of times, and in the last tournament against the second roster, I don't believe. No, it's Brandocastra, the fourth roster. No, there's no Denma in the first. Okay, I've played his Riot Girl Fair team with Denma and without Chimera in the same time for some reason. Denma is annoying as hell. He dodges well, especially when you reroll on plus 3 pH and just 12 point smoke on 20.
Yeah.
Like that for free. Like, why? What? Yeah.
Power of that smoke is it's really something. You're right, the second list, we've got that sort of Riot Girl core team. I've really struggled playing against that in the past. MSV on a heavy infantry fire team is a hell of a thing. That missile launch in particular can be a pain. Panda, what do you think of these rosters and the Riot Girl core?
Yeah, the Riot Girl core is obviously excellent. What I find maybe a bit surprising is, at least in the first roster, having Cenobites and Reverends instead of the Riot Girl core. It has the Riot Girl Harris, though. And yeah, Denma, of course, is excellent.
That's a full Reverend core. With Eva Machine Gun, Cenobites, Mazragata. So that's a full composition Mimetism N6 core.
Yeah.
That's a different archetype, and it's somewhat popular in our meta. So this one or Riot. Just choose between them.
You have an MSV core or a MIM6 core, and I guess they both just do different things, don't they?
Yeah. And the one good thing about Bakunin is that when you can make two lists, you can make one list with the Riot Girl core and the one list with the Reverend core, and then depending on your opponent, you pick the one that fits better for that matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. Very flexible faction.
Okay, and what I also would like to mention is that there is no smart missile in the first part of IGL rosters. Yeah, the first half. So it's Bakunin without GML.
Yeah, that's also a bit surprising to me. I think he has on the second part of his rosters.
Yes,
he has.
The second part he has one. That's more sport-oriented roster, I'd say, the second part.
But only in one of those second part rosters he has. And there, of course, he initiated with Deployable with Peter.
Oh, yes, that's the roster I played against with my Torchlight the last time. Yeah, that's exactly the roster. The Rounder in Harris with Orphan and Moderator Pitcher, actually.
Yeah.
Did we see a lot of GML in this IGL generally, or not so much? I mean,
at least if we look at the top 16 list, there is actually very little GML in those. Yes. I think there are only few players that had GML as an essential part of their lists, and even those lists, they didn't rely on GML. That was just one tool in those lists.
Yeah.
But most lists, like the top 6 lists, have almost no GML at all.
Yeah, that's 7th is Lobo.
Yeah, and some people have talked about that the GML discourse is very overdone in IGL, and that has led to meta decline in IGL, and I mean, that's obviously complete nonsense, but these lists also show that it's indeed complete nonsense.
Yeah.
It really depends on the faction. If you meet a lot of vanilla nomads in your meta, you may face a lot of GML.
Right, right.
Or Bakunin, or especially Tunguska. Tunguska really wants GML, I think. It's not great faction without GML.
But, I mean, I'm flicking through. The only GML I've seen so far, I'm on 11th place right now, has been Lobo. Obviously, Pilgrim bought it in the MO list, but I'm not sure he enjoyed it or used it. so I'm not really counting that. The Bakunin didn't have it in the first half, did in the second, but there's just really not a lot of it around.
Itchstrong had GML in one of his lists, but I saw most of his games and I never saw him use GML, so it was just an extra tool there.
Yeah, I never saw it. Should we move on to Druze, 13th place?
Yeah, Druze, they're same as I did in the previous time, so nothing really special about them, what can I say? There's Wolfgang Amadeus Wolf in the first one, but he's definitely entering this last lunch or armory and just killing everybody inside. Yeah. I'd personally take Saita, probably, or both of them, but that's Fiddler and Wolf are definitely more than enough to clear armory.
Yeah. How is Druze doing well at the moment? What makes Druze strong?
You can create, you have 10 troopers in the first group, and all 10 of them are linkable, and only smart missile in your first group is not in composition. Like, that's the power of Druze.
Right.
You have Brawlers, Druze, Ida Swanson, Diggers, two Diggers, Tau Wu, whatever you want, and you mix them whatever you like. And you have electromagnetical grenade launcher, and you have pitchers with hacker, and you have smart missile. And you can put the smart missile on arrow from Harris. And you have Fiddler, and Saita Togan, and Yuan Yuans, Hun Zakuts, like cheapest for the observers, infiltrators, whatever. It's probably not the best faction, because the main infantry you have, Druze, are very expensive, like 30 points for Ballistic 12, that's it. Viral pistols are nice. Actually, Beer cannot really kill you. Well, he will kill everybody, but with templates.
Sure.
But they will kill Beer in response, so he cannot continue. Ida has a viral mind layer and in composition. So, yeah, that's a nice faction to play.
So
generally, very nice.
You're talking a lot here, I guess, about some asymmetric play. You've got the pitchers, you've got EM grenade launcher, you've got the GML, and then you've obviously got the flexibility in what you put in the fire team.
Yeah, and not the worst face-to-face in terms of MSV2 sniper and or HMG, with plus damage HMG, by the way.
Yeah.
It's okay. And Fiddler.
Fiddler is great. Thoughts from you, Panda? Druze, 13th place.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to see Druze in top 16. I agree that it's an okay faction. The obvious weakness is that you have a lot of one wound models that can't really take a punch, but the upside, of course, is the versatility that Fox Springer talked about. And you still have, like, besides that flexibility, you still have a lot of really good models like Fiddler, Hun Zakut, Saido, Armand, and pretty okay tag as well.
Do we worry about what Druze does playing second? Is that a concern for Druze?
Not really.
No?
To be honest, no.
Okay. What makes you say that? Because to me, you know, I see a list of one wound dudes. They have the core. Not a ton of MSV. I'd be a little bit worried.
I don't know. To me, just having N MSV is already good enough.
Right.
And you have Diggers with templates, and you have Fugazi.
That's true.
Yuan actually having just Yuan on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to deploy it from the orbit. You don't need to go to combat jump.
Right.
And most likely all the Yuans we can see in the roster are actually starting on the table.
Yeah, okay.
As a smoke thrower and a template screen and whatever.
Okay.
Hun Zakut is sort of resilient model. Fiddler definitely don't accept anybody in close range.
Yeah. Okay, so you can actually cover your deployment zone reasonably well, and you do have the MSV2 sniper, so you've got enough to get through.
Yeah, to me, that's definitely enough.
Okay. fair enough.
For some newer players, I'm sorry, I'll say a note that for some newer players, some questions for almost all the factions, and what do I do, how do I deploy, and enemy comes forward, kills my stuff, flash pulses do nothing. Well, if you know how to position them, flash pulse is the best hero in the game, kind of, for the price especially.
For the price you pay, yeah absolutely.
Just know how, if you know how to position, that's definitely more than enough raw capabilities in Drew's faction.
Oh, fair enough. And also, of course, the flash pulse bring their repeaters, which is often also very significant for a lot of matchups.
Yeah. And you always have a hacker in Drew's.
Exactly.
I believe you kind of have to take it.
Anything else on that, or should we go to JSA?
I could just add that I totally agree with Foxbringer, but you just need to know how to deploy Druze well.
Yeah.
Because if you are a less experienced player and try Druze, you might leave some gaps open that your opponent can exploit and then engage those brawlers and Druzes that you don't want them to engage. But with good, careful deployment, I think they can handle themselves pretty well.
It certainly makes sense. You've got to be very careful on deployment with Druze. You probably need to be, obviously, a very confident player. And, you know, of course, you know, these guys in the top 16 are, so makes sense. Let's talk about Grotnib's love affair with the Tanko missile launcher.
I like Tanko missile launcher, but I don't like that it's most likely in Haris every single time. But at the same time, you can see that you can mix teams, like Damaro as first team creation model, two Tanko and two Kempeitai wild cards. So you can create a heavy infantry core. With you can give sixth sense to Tanko missile. That's what's important.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't like Kisotsu heavy machine gun. Like, my inner pano says, like, you never take HMG with ballistic 10. Spend points on something else. I don't believe in solo Miyamoto Musashi. That's also really strange to me, personally. Like, 20 points. Well, he's fast. He kills everything in close combat. Yeah. Flash pulse on willpower 15. Wow, NVI, but like I don't understand it. Korosha Rider Lieutenant, yeah, that's a beautiful specialist, very fast specialist with smoke grenade launcher. And it can definitely, and it even can shoot with combi light shotgun, discharge close combat, nice. You have chain of command, why not? And actually, chain of command can PTI with Korosha, that's 47 points for three orders. It's okay. Definitely. Korosha is dogged, so she can continue, but most likely she'll die in the first turn. That's usual for her. But I don't really... Once again, that's definitely not my playstyle. I don't understand the first roster at all.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about the first roster. Yeah. I played with Grotnib many times, so I think the main purpose for Korosha is to, at least in the beginning of the game, to provide smoke that JSA generally lacks.
Oh, there's no Yojimbo also. Like, how can't you not take Yojimbo but take Miyamoto? That's strange.
I think that's, like, generally Grotnib would prefer Yojimbo, but in this case, because of the armory was in the missing lineup, and Yojimbo, well, I mean, Yojimbo can dismount the bike, but Musashi is also quite fast, so basically Musashi is, like, the fourth Tanko in the list. And I guess the Keisotsu heavy machine gun, it's obviously not a great piece, but I guess he had enough points to take it, and it's kind of this last resort, big weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely. Five shots is still five shots, but I'll just never take it anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the idea in the, like, group one in his first list is that other than Ruiken and Shinobu, those eight other guys there are linkable. So basically you have one five-man core team and one three-man Harris.
Mm. So it's very flexible on the fire teams, isn't it? I was surprised by the lack of Yojimbo, but I guess I can understand why in some senses you might take something and else.
And I think he also might have taken a look at the maps before, and I think the maps were not the best ones for bikes, if I recall correctly.
I think it depended on which version you got. Some of them were quite open and others were quite closed. So, it was mixed. I think it was quite mixed.
I can agree on these bikes. On some maps are just unplayable. Canals map is just not for bikes if you go second. But of course you like create your roster knowing that you probably may go second and then your bikes will all die. A Heroi roster is nice. Yeah, just Heroi. But I don't understand Yevo Hacker for Heroi. Once again, I can see Yevo for just one of the roster for Last Lunch. Yes. I can't understand it for any other case in JSI Army.
I think I probably did talk with Grotnip about this list. I don't remember exactly what he said, but I think like both of these lists could potentially play last launch, and it just depended on the opponent which list he wanted to use.
Yeah, then totally understandable, yeah.
I think I understand most of these rosters. There's a surprising amount of toughness in JSA. I mean, a lot of Tankos. I think we had... did he play Damaru at all, or did he skip over them? I think.
Oh, yeah, Samurai Storm roster is really strange, because you have Tanka Missile and two Tanka in Haris, then Ayama Damaru and Kisotsu Missile to Kisotsu, and that's the only heavy weapons in the group. And the second, there's Shinobu, Damaru Spitfire to Damaru, and Yajimba, the link.
I think you've got to commend someone that takes three Tankos and four Domaru.
Well,
what a flex.
And Oyama as well.
Yeah, what a flex.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy infantry guys. It's really beautiful, but only missile launcher.
Yeah, it's still BS-13 missile launcher and a Tanko. So it's, or if it's in a full core team, it's BS-14, which is okay, even on active turn. I think the purpose of Samurai Storm was probably to be for firefight, because this list has no specialists. If you kill one specialist from the opponent, you already have two objective points.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Missile launchers on the active turn are extremely variable, aren't they? But I guess on the right map, on the right mission, I could understand like why you would run this.
But also it has two wounds and it's only 27 points. So if you lose the face-to-face and it dies, it's not the end of the world.
What were you going to say, Foxbringer? Sorry.
Yeah, at the same time, I'd take a doctor probably for all the missiles you have. And if it's for firefight, why Kisotsu Lieutenant? Why not Damaru Lieutenant?
So, a couple of things that we're wondering about, but I think overall we kind of get what's going on mostly here.
Definitely.
I have to say, like, Rodnip has a, I think, quite unique way of building lists that, like, usually the most common approach is that you take what is good in the faction, put those models in a list, and then fill the last positions with something that you think the list needs. Usually, I think Grotnip approaches list building from a perspective that he thinks what the list needs and then tries to find the best tool for that role in the lists. That sometimes with some factions lead to some like not optimal choices, because that faction might not have the best tool for that role. For example, using Genpei, Shock Marksman Rifle, MSV guy, it's not the best MSV guy there is. But usually his lists work really good together. And they're really well thought out.
Well, you're saying he starts by taking the strongest things that he can find, and then he fills out the roles.
No, I mean that is I think the common approach with most players is that they start with the strongest profiles, put them in the list, and then of course, fill out the rest.
Yeah. Looking at number 15 combined army, the two initial lists for the start of the tournament, we have a Sphinx list and we have a Sheskin list. No Anathematic, no Corrunted, no Bulltrack. What do we think of a Sphinx list in vanilla combined?
That's a very strong list, and it looks like very similar to what I played against Peak. Peak played with kind of same list. Nurkia Sphinx, Erdron, Skudron, Gaki Taiga, Liberta, looks like the same roster to me, and Caliban Chok. It's a very strong list.
Yeah.
Sphinx is a beautiful tag, and Nurkias is, oh my god, that's Nurkias.
Yeah, Nurkias is obviously, you know, I would say probably one of the best profiles in the game, personally.
Agree. One of.
What I find surprising is, well, first of all, I find it a bit surprising that there is no Anathematic in top 16 of IGL. And I don't think El Titan has Anathematic in any of his lists, which is also a bit surprising. But in general, his lists look really strong. But I'm a little bit surprised about with the first list that there is Sphinx and there's also Q Drone, but I don't see any engineers there.
No, I don't think there are any engineers. Can I also point out no Bitten Kiss? Which I think is.
But if you don't have the missile bot, you don't necessarily need Bitten Kiss for a list.
Maybe one of the things that we need to reflect on here is that, Combined Army is an extremely powerful faction and they have such a wide variety of ways that they can play. We're looking at four lists here, none of which have GML. None of which have Bitten Kiss, none of which have an Anathematic. And yet we can still agree that these are probably really strong lists because the Sphinx is obviously amazing. Nurkias is amazing. And I think Sheskin perhaps slightly underrated, but still a very solid, solid piece.
Caliban, Rasyat, Hajduk is kind of not common, but it's still AP marksman MSVTO shooter.
Yeah. I guess this just sort of demonstrates how flexible combined can be,
And then I can see a new addition in Avatar test list, a base operator engineer, actually the cheapest engineer after the reinforcements update. So X-ray engineer.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting test to see how that does.
Yeah, there's also Victor Messer in that list, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
But still no smart missile.
Yeah. And I think he has Rasyat in every one of his lists.
I really like Rasyat. He can deploy in your opponent's back and kill everybody. He can eclipse smoke, fight in melee, shoot, whatever. One wound, yes, but...
I think Combined Army attacks from so many different angles. You know, you cover the front from the Sphinx, which is hard to do because it's a camouflage tag. And, of course, the Rasyat walks on the back. So it's really difficult to cover every angle against a good combined list, and this really demonstrates that.
Yeah, I think Rasyat can be okay in one combined army. And what I find interesting is that I don't think any of the Morat lists had Rasyat.
No.
Yeah, and Pif also don't have any Rasyats.
No.
If we see how it's called Mind Vibe mission, of course Rasyat in every roster, but...
Mm. Well, there you go. I think that's quite interesting. Should we talk about the final placement? That's Hakislam at 16th place. This first list, I think, is one of the greediest Hakislam lists I've ever seen. We have a Mukhtar, an Asawira, an Amur, an Azrael, and a Fide, all in one group. And then we've got the second group of basically entirely irregulars. Not quite entirely, but close to it. Quite similar on the second list as well, but they've taken out the Asawira, which is becoming more common now from what I can see. And then similar lists for three. And four similar-ish. I've played Hakislam for a long time. I think the Namur is not as common as an inclusion, but I can totally understand why someone would take it, particularly for the missions that we were running with zone control. The Namur dodges well. It's quite dependable. It has total immunity, things like that. What are your two thoughts, Foxbringer? What do you think about these?
Namur is kind of strange to me. Yeah, I totally understand Namur, but I'd still take a Savir over Namur in any case.
Yeah.
Maybe together, yes, but if we choose between them, that's very strange to me. At the same time, Azrael, AP, HMG everywhere. Why not to take Fearbuck? It's just minus one burst, but you have much better ammunition, and you can actually put him on ARO with AXP shot from Fearbuck, and better distance, of course.
It's also
never
4 points.
Azrael, HMG.
It's 4 points more expensive, so there might have been a Feuerbach like in a previous version of the list, and then he just decided to take the AP heavy machine gun.
Maybe.
Because there were no points.
Yeah, so there's greedy Namur plus a Savira, so that's probably where all the points. But I don't think it's very difficult to find 4 points in Hekislam. But in those rosters, probably yes, because of those very powerful single models.
Double Fidelist is the second one. We've got the Fidei and Aljabal. I think, you know, that's obviously really good for some zone control kind of stuff as well. So I can understand these rosters. They do seem a little bit greedy, but I kind of get what they're doing.
I like the second better, actually. Yeah, Fidei, Aljabal. I hate them.
Yeah. And then you've still got the Azrael. You've still got the Mukhtar for the MSV. So your gunfighting isn't bad either. Some Hekislam lists have been sacrificing the Asawira for the Azrael. How do we feel about that?
It really depends on the play style, because Azrael is long-range heavy hitter, and Asavira is well-rounder on mid-range.
Yeah, I agree. Panda, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree that it like, depends on the play style and what do you want to use the model for. I think they're like, they have totally different roles. Asavira is, of course, more mobile. And Asavira can duo. What I like about this first list is that there are two duos. And like all of them are, of course, linkable together. So he can, at the beginning of the game, decide which are going to duo together.
Yeah.
I find it a bit weird that there's a Namur without tactical awareness, which I think is obviously a better model. Of course, a couple of points more expensive.
Is it the one, because he's taking the one with the Emirat, so I wonder if that's why?
Yeah, it might be for a room.
Yeah.
If you're in the killer room, then Umarat is pretty nice.
Because I think you get a worse template on the tactical aware. I think it's a shotgun, if I remember correctly. I can't off the top of my head.
I think the loadout is otherwise the same, but they don't have the Emirat, and they are a couple of points more expensive, and they get the tactical awareness.
Actually, important to note that Namur, in comparison to Asavir, it's light infantry. It's unhackable.
Yes, so it's not hackable. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and it still has two wounds and total immunity. So it's pretty good in the room.
Yeah.
I really like Namur's personally. So usually if I play Hekislam, I like the duos a lot. It's often difficult to fit two duos in lists, but I really like lists where there are points for two duos.
Yeah.
Usually, like, they can make great duos with one good shooter like Asavira IP Spitfire or the Mukhtar et Fury, and then have a specialist like the Namur or Rafik or Mukhtar Hacker.
Yeah, I agree.
Taking out that duo or the Asavira Doctor.
So these are interesting lists. Lots of the similar kind of pieces that we'll usually see, but a couple of differences with the Namur specifically.
I think none of these have Saladin.
No, I think they're all Ghulam lieutenants.
Yeah, or half the lieutenant. I really like Saladin, but of course, like, there are so many models in Hekislam that you want to take.
I think Saladin gives you more orders, but I think you usually have to lose a gun. Sorry, you have to lose a gun because he's like 30 points, I think.
36, I think.
Yeah.
And two Ghulams is 22.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big difference.
That's our top 16. I mean, we started with Foxbringer's notes. Panda, I mean, do you want to go back and raise anything that you don't think has been covered? Any queries you had or anything that you found interesting?
No, I think everything that I had in my notes is pretty much covered at this point.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, we had a very varied top 16, as we said, 14 different factions. we obviously saw the top two players play seven missions. That's Ape Strong and King Butt. So I think, you know, we can say that it was a bit of a slog. There was a lot to get through for them. So the people who won obviously played extremely well. And what I'm really interested to see is the variety. You know, we don't have a lot of GML. We've only got a little bit. We've got lots of different factions, lots of different strategies. We've seen some very weird lists with lots of drop troops, lots of hidden deployment. And I think even Ape Strong's Morat's lists were a little bit interesting as well. Because I don't think he ran a Yalgat in any of them.
Yeah, I think that's the main difference between Ape Strong, some Pivs.
Yeah.
More at the start. Ape Strong, he didn't have Yalgat. Mm. He used more Kythox.
Yeah, yeah. So
a slightly different approach.
Sort of a tougher list, but it sacrificed the firepower. So we can draw some large differences and some small ones with the lists as well. Any final thoughts before we wrap up for today? No? We're happy?
Just generally, I want to say that was a really nice tournament again, well organized. Mm-hmm. I had really, really good games throughout the all six rounds. And it's really nice that IGL has been given this satellite status.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to gather 90 players from different countries together to have fun.
Well, thank you.
So it was great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I completely agree.
I think it's a real privilege running a satellite event. I think it's amazing that we get people who can play in IGL that don't have a local meta. There have been a couple of individuals on the server that have said, you know, if they weren't playing online, they just wouldn't get to play the game at all. So I love that. I think it's really important. And one of the other things that I really love about IGL is that you can faction hop, you can test new strategies before you buy into stuff. And I just think that helps with some amount of creativity. I know that we got stuck in perhaps a bit of a GML repetitive pattern for a while, but these lists seem very different and I just appreciate that. I think it's been interesting.
Oh, and also thanks to everybody who watched the streams. Mm. Me and Panda did, and all other players, and who allowed to stream all the games.
Mm. Yeah, thank you.
That's another really nice feature of IGL. You can see the games.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and they will stay on YouTube, on Foxbringers and my channel, so they can be watched later as well.
Thank you so much for streaming. I think it really, really helps to bring a bit of excitement. And of course, it's really good for newer players that want to see, you know, some of the top 16 games, because they were quite, obviously really well played games there. But I think that's all from us today. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. And I guess I will speak to you later about perhaps the next event or something.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. See you, Panda. And
thank you for inviting.
Cool, no worries. And see you, Foxbringer.